WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
According to CDC data, there were 141,074 new cases of colon and rectal cancer in the year 2018. Today, we're hearing from two survivors, one who is no stranger to WBTV viewers.
And he suggested hospice. I'm like, hold on, cowboy.
We're talking about fighting colorectal cancer and about why getting screened is so important. This is WBTV's Good Question. Welcome to WBTV's Good Question. Alex Giles here with two of my WBTV colleagues, Jamie Bull and Steve Crump. And we have a special guest today, Glenn McDermott, who lives up in the Lake Norman area. Correct, Glenn?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Well, today we're talking about colorectal cancer or colon cancer. March is officially Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and we wanted to highlight colon cancer and the importance of getting screened. Steve and Glenn, both two survivors of colon cancer, who have been kind enough to stop by and talk about their personal journeys and the importance of getting screened. Steve, I wanted to start with you and see if you would just mind giving us, first off, an update on how you're doing and explain how this all began, this chapter in your life.
Well, I like to say that 7/21/18 or tonight's, not tonight's, winning lottery numbers. It was that day on the 21st of July back in 2018 that five words changed my life. And that is, Mr. Crump, you have cancer. And that was in the ER of Atrium North CMC in Concord. And I'd been going through, I guess, some unusual digestive kinds of things and bathroom kinds of things and the whole bit, and wasn't getting any better. And so, you know, in terms of getting to this point nearly 4 years later, I mean, obviously not to become overly ecclesiastical. I mean, giving thanks to God and obviously my incredible wife, Kathy, and friends like you and Jamie and Glenn, who you'll hear from in a moment. You know, it's all been part of the journey. And we'll get into this later on because I want to, you know, kind of get into where we are with the importance of being screened as well as what this disease can actually do. But it's been an interesting road. But considering the fact that I'm still here, I'm amazingly blessed.
Absolutely, Glenn. When did this begin for you?
Yeah, I think everybody remembers that date. Yeah, that when they come deliver those words, you know. October 28th, 2010, you know, they came in and I kept getting misdiagnosed. You know, I was 44.
Wow.
And, you know, kind of the same thing. I'd gotten sick in July of 2010 and went to the emergency room and, you know, and I told them about, you know, some bad bathroom habits, some blood in my stool and stuff like that. And they kept diagnosing me with, you know, hemorrhoids. They said, you've got internal hemorrhoids. And he actually did a, you know, he checked me there on the table before I left and just said I was dehydrated and sent me home, told me to follow up with my my primary care physician and something, you know, got sick again in October and they scheduled me for a colonoscopy. And you know, I remember him coming out and saying the same thing, you know, you've got cancer. And I'm like, what? You mean polyps? No, cancer. You've got a substantial size tumor just inside. And I'm like, you know, you just get in a fog kind of, you know.
How old were you?
44. Yeah.
So you'd have been even before, I guess, what the typical colonoscopy thing starts right around 50. So you wouldn't have even normally had one scheduled.
Correct. I'll never forget when we went in to see my surgeon down here, you know, the first thing he did when he walked in is he looked at me and he goes, what in the world are you doing here?
Yeah.
This doesn't happen to 44-year-old, you know. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty, it got pretty busy there for a while. Yeah.
I had the same question for both of you. And Glenn, I'll start with you. When you started feeling unwell, was colon cancer something that was even a blip on the radar for you as to, oh no, something's not right. I wonder if it's colon cancer.
No, I never thought that. Even, you know, my general practitioner, she went through and did x-rays and even did an ultrasound on my gut, you know, but my tumor was low, it was in my rectum. And you're, you know, so dense, they never picked it up. They never saw it until they issued that colonoscopy, you know, and that's, yeah, that never entered my mind. I had no idea what was going on.
Steve, did you think that colon cancer was a possibility?
remotely. And I'm going to tell you why, because there is a history of cancer in my family. I mean, my mom died of breast cancer at age 50. Her brother, my uncle, he died of colon cancer. And there have been three first cousins of my own generation who have passed away from cancer. In fact, one of my eldest cousins says to me, he's like, well, I understand you've inherited the family disease. And with that being the case, it was one of those things of where understanding in terms of, you know, like who me, this is impossible, but coming to grips with a lot of the family history, it made it very palatable from the standpoint of understanding what was out there and that it was a very good possibility.
When you get that news that you have cancer, how does that shift your mindset and your outlook on life?
I'm sure Glenn's going to agree with me. It impacts your priorities. It makes you think about your own mortality. I mean, I've said before, it's not necessarily a reality check. It's a mortality check. And to add insult to injury, you know, I'm kind of thinking that song by Elton John, I'm still standing, because 12 hours after my initial diagnosis, there was one of the doctors who suggested hospice for me.
Just 12 hours?
I get diagnosed at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. They keep me in overnight. We're doing scans. We're doing this and doing that. And a particular internal medicine doctor who was doing rounds and, you know, looked at the scans and the pictures and, you know, they're coming in and he's drawing pictures of my liver. Oh, your liver looks like raisin bread and this, that, and the other thing. And he suggested hospice. And I'm like, hold on, cowboy. Let's talk about, you know, some other options, you know, far as maybe a transplant or maybe this or maybe that. All the while, my sainted wife is listening to this as well, because even though, you know, you're the one going through this, you realize you got to be strong for other people.
Right.
Got to be strong for other people. It ain't always all about you, man.
When you had to, you know, go home and tell the people you love about the diagnosis, Glenn, what was that like?
You know, it was, it's like Steve said, it was just disbelief. Yeah. I mean, I've never been sick before in my life. It was literally a fog. And my wife, she was just amazing. She had a roommate that her husband was director of sports medicine up at Duke, and she's calling him right away saying, hey, you guys know anybody in the colorectal department? Which Dr. Manti was huge, you know, well known in the, you know. And then we had gotten set up down here in Charlotte. Everything went really quick as far as doctor's appointments, opinions, but you find yourself, it was just a fog, you know, it was just disbelief. You don't, and you start telling people and you don't, you hear it coming out of your mouth, but you don't, it's not computing, you know, you don't get it.
And you're, and it's like, am I really saying this?
Right.
Are these words coming out of my mouth? You know?
Yeah.
Steve's outlook obviously was very grim, it sounds like, or at least with one doctor from the onset. What was it like for you? Did they?
Oh, I went in, I remember going into the, so when I finally got my colonoscopy, the doctor came up and I was like, you know, I'm listening to him. And he's like, well, you're going to go get surgery immediately. They're going to cut it out. And then you're going to go through radiation and you're going to go through chemo. And, you know, and he's telling me all this stuff and you're going to be bagged for life. And, you know, and he's going through all this. And I'm like, you're trying to take it in and absorb, and nothing's really, you know. So then I came down here to Presby and I met with, Dr. Jerby, who he was a young guy, came in and like I said, the first thing out of his mouth is, what in the world are you doing here? This doesn't happen to 44-year-old guys. He's like, tell me what you know. And it was a small room. I mean, it was a tiny room. There was an exam table in the middle. My wife was sitting in one corner. I was in the other in that room. You know, only it was like 8 by 10 feet, but it seemed like it was a football field. We were apart, you know. And he comes in. He's like, what do you know? And I start going through and telling him what I'd been told. And he goes, well, I don't know why they told you that. I don't know why they told you that. I don't know why they told you that, you know. And he's like, do you mind if I draw for you? And he pulls out a Sharpie and he starts drawing on the white paper. And the next thing you know, sharing how we both pull up to the table. And we're going through this. And he's like, he just starts going through the whole process. He goes, if you have me do your surgery, this is the way we're going to go about it. We're going to do radiation. We're going to try to shrink this tumor down as much as we can. You know, we'll go through some chemotherapy to kill anything else that's out, you know, and he was very it got my attention for the first time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And when I left that room, he told me, he says, I need for you to do two things. I need for you to keep a positive attitude, and I need for you to keep your weight up. Mm. I'm an aircraft mechanic. I fix stuff, and I didn't know how to fix this up until this day. He just gave me a task. He gave me two things that I could do. Mm-hmm. And I put blinders on, and I went. I just did it. I didn't, you know? So it was pretty cool. Yeah, it was a cool journey. It was a cool journey.
You mentioned, I believe you said 11 years cancer-free, right, Glenn?
11 years, yeah.
How long from the diagnosis to getting that point where they told you you're cancer-free, how long did that take?
July 6th was my last chemo treatment in 2012.
Okay.
And that was literally the next aha moment, because like I was telling, you know, those blinders, you just mm-hmm. you keep those blinders on. And I remember, I didn't go into that treatment thinking it was going to be my last chemo treatment. But I remember my oncologist was super cool, and he's like, all right, Glenn, I'll see you in 3 months. And I remember walking out and just thinking, 3 months? And I got in my truck, and I'm backing out, and I had to stop my putt and park, and I'm like, he just made me an appointment for 3 months. He must expect me to be alive in 3 months. You know, and that was yeah. kind of the yeah. next, this is all right, you know? So it was, yeah, it was pretty cool.
How routine are the checks now and the follow-ups?
Being 10 years, they told me that I could go out to 5 years on my colonoscopies, which I told them I like, you know, I'm okay with colonoscopies. They don't bother me. You know, I'd rather be at three. So and now with the pandemic and everything kind of got pushed back. So I'm getting ready to go in next month, and I'll be right at 5 years, but I'm good with going every three. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I'm good with that.
Steve, talk about the attitude of that and why that's so important. Like Glenn is pointing out, it's okay, I've got a task, I've got a plan, I'm going to do everything in my power to defeat this. How important is that part of this?
I think attitude's everything.
Yeah.
You know, from the standpoint of where there is a former Charlotte Fire Department dispatcher who passed away a few months ago after a long kidney illness and going through dialysis and that. And he said to me, and this is before I was diagnosed, he says, you know, when I go in for my treatment, I shake hands with people, I look them squarely in the eye, and I smile at folks. And he said, there are people that are in far better health than I am that I will look at, and they will walk in the door, and 2 feet are already in the grave, mm-hmm. in spite of, you know, and not necessarily knowing. So, you know, you can't let yourself get down. I mean, surround yourself with... you know, with positive people. I mean, my whole thing was like OPP, only positive people. And, you know, the thing that's interesting, Glenn is the only non-journalist sitting at the table, and you talk about with us what we do with our lives as a career. There's always, you know, a sense of invincibility from the standpoint, it's like, I can't get cancer. I've survived the killing fields of Sudan. I've been to Sarajevo. I've been to Nicaragua and Somalia and came out okay. You know, you can't go through this. And the reality is, you know, when, you know, a doctor basically says, yo, you gotta slow your roll. You got some things you gotta basically, you know, take care of before you are able to even, you know, put one foot in front of the other again.
Gosh, if you don't mind me asking,
yeah,
you're still undergoing treatment, correct?
Absolutely. I have a treatment at 2:15 this afternoon, mm-hmm. and I'm still doing chemo a couple of times a month. I have had a chemo treatment last Tuesday. I have another one next Monday. And, you know, this is kind of a critical period of a couple of weeks because I have a CT scan, which they're doing every 3 months now. But the last couple of scans have been clean. So, you know, depending on if this next one's clean, we'll probably do some another surgery. And then I have another colonoscopy in terms of having done one a year or so ago. But when we did that last colonoscopy, there was no polyps. I mean, everything mm-hmm. turned out okay. So, you know, in that vein, you try to do what it is you, you know, they tell you to do, even though in your own mind, you know that you can be stubborn on occasion.
What's the emotion every time you got to take another test?
Scary.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah.
I mean, to be very blunt, when I've had some of the, you know, where there's been some indecisiveness, and I'll come back to that in a moment as far as some of the doctors, like out of a scene from the movie 12 Angry Men, but it was one of those things of where, you know, and Kathy has been with me through just about every appointment I've been through. But every once in a while, you'll get some news that I wouldn't say is discouraging or disappointing, but you know, things that will make you think. And at the end of the day, and especially when you're alone, you're driving home in your car. You know, for me, you know, the reality is I got to get better because I love my wife too much to do anything to hurt her. Mm-hmm. And failing through bad health is one of those things that would hurt her.
I suppose there's no thing as a routine test then, you know, anytime you have to go in, right?
It's so surreal, you know, when, like Steve was saying, positive attitude and just building up to the test or the next checkup or this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a firm believer that we never get anything in our lives that we can't handle. And when I remember when I got the diagnosis, I'm like, you got the wrong guy. Mm. I don't give blood because I'm afraid of needles. This is going to require more than a finger prick, you know. I reluctantly say that every checkup I went to, I always had good results. I didn't have bad results. I mean, I probably had 6 different procedures, surgeries later for scar tissue and this, that, and the other. Mm. But as far as reoccurrence of disease, everything was always positive. Everything was always good.
Yeah. If you are sick with COVID-19 or think you might have it, stay home except to get medical care. Monitor your symptoms. If your symptoms get worse, contact your doctor. Get rest and stay hydrated. Avoid public transportation, ride sharing, or taxis. And take these 6 steps to protect others. Wear a mask over your mouth and nose if you must be around other people. Cover your mouth and nose with a tissue when you cough or sneeze. Clean your hands often with soap and water or use hand sanitizer, especially after coughing or sneezing. As much as possible, stay in a separate room and away from others in your home. Avoid sharing personal household items such as dishes, utensils, towels, or bedding. Wash these items thoroughly after using them. And clean all surfaces that are touched often, like counters and doorknobs, every day. To learn more, visit cdc.gov.
Steve, early on when we talked for the first time, we did an interview, mm-hmm. and I think you were a little reluctant to say the word at the time that it was colon cancer. Describe just kind of that process you went through to get to the point where you thought, you know what, I do need to talk about this.
I think that in terms of, again, you know, having 3 journalists around a table, and, you know, we have been in those situations where something bad has happened to somebody. If it's the loss of a loved one, you're at a crime scene, or somebody loses their house in a fire or whatever, you know, we're always trying to figure out when's the best way to run up and put a microphone in their face.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in terms of, and it's the whole adage of being protective of those around me where, you know, you demand, I guess, a certain degree of privacy. And I think that that was more so for the folks around me. I mean, anybody that knows me, I'm a fairly open book. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things of where, you know, you don't necessarily want to let the cat out the bag. So, Jamie, I remember that Saturday when you and me and a camera guy by the name of Jordan Sawyers were in our conference room, and I wouldn't say colon cancer on camera. I just said, I'm going through an undisclosed illness and I'm going to be away for a while. And that was before really all hell broke loose, you know, because in fact, you know, just to, going through the whole episode, of, as I mentioned, the 12 Angry Men, 2 days after initially being diagnosed, there were 6 doctors in the room at Atrium. And they could not come to a sense of conclusion in terms of the best theory in terms of how it is that I'm going to be healed or worked upon or whatever you want to call it. And so there's a county commissioner here in Mecklenburg County who was known for a particular saying, Bob Walton, the late Bob Walton. And he said, it's not always protocol, but who to call? And the answer was not Ghostbusters. You know, but knowing someone in another city who had gone through similar circumstances, I have a friend that's on the, Glenn was talking about his contacts with Duke. I had a friend that's on the foundation board at Embry in Atlanta who had gone through cancer. And it was one of those things like, hey, we'll get you my oncologist. He's one of the best in the country, Dr. David Kuby, who does seminars and workshops all over the world and the like. And, you know, we'll get you in here. So within 2 hours, I had an appointment at Emory. And, you know, to bring this part of the story to a close, what was supposed to happen, supposed to have been real simple, where it's just like, you know, they had the scans, they had the slides, they had all the telemedicine stuff. And it's just like, I remember Kathy and I going to Emory and we get screened and, you know, and the best analogy I can offer, it's almost like being a suspect in a crime when the jury's out and your people pacing up and down the hall because you don't know what they're going to tell you. Mm. And so knock comes on the door opens, you feel the sense of anticipation. And Dr. Kuby basically says to me, Mr. Crump, your condition is very treatable. And then, as I like to say, but we're going to have to go in baby steps. I'm like, okay. And so the process was to be basically we do the chemo here. This is in August. This is a month after. You know, we do the chemo here in Charlotte, and we do the heavy lifting surgery in Atlanta.
Wow.
Well, short version is after the chemo happens, I become infected. And Jamie, I remember the day that you came out to our house, and it was one of those things of where, you know, you know, to kind of give you the punchline before giving you the backstory, there were people who told me, said, "Hey, when we saw you, we were told this is the last time we would ever see you. Mm. We were told it would be the last time we would ever talk to you," and that's pretty unnerving. I mean, to be blunt, it scares the hell out of you, and even one night, Kathy's going through some pictures on the phone, and there's a picture of me, and I'm like, baby, please don't show that to me ever again. And I'm like in my bed, and I got stuff in my nose, I got IVs, and this, that, and the other thing. And so, as a result of contracting MRSA in the hospital, I was there for 51 days, lost somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 pounds, and I was on dialysis, I was on a ventilator, my right lung had collapsed, and a feeding tube. Atrophy had set in my legs and I couldn't walk. And again, I was there for like, you know, a good month and a half. I mean, it was rough, man. I mean, that was just, you know, so you can understand why I basically talk about faith, friends, support from the public, and just kind of going through that sort of an ordeal. So the surgery was supposed to have happened in November of 18. We didn't do it until August of 19, but it was just that whole bad window of time of just, you know, just being at the brink constantly.
Did you want to talk about it to other people and to try to help spread a positive message about this?
You know, I think I spent a little bit of time, like Steve, saying I would call close friends and let them know what was going on. And then, of course, the word spreads. You know, it's just like...
And especially through social.
Right, right. And... I remember when you went and you told everybody that you were taking a leave of absence. I was actually, you know, and I often wondered what you were going through. And I, you know, because guys, we don't talk about stuff like that. We don't, you know, we don't open up. You know, we don't talk. Men's health is kind of taboo in a lot of places.
Exactly.
And I realized that, you know, the more I shared my story, the more people would sit, you know, and I realized how important that was. And I realized how nice it would have been if I would have had someone like myself or a story or someone like Steve that we could, because I didn't know anybody. I mean, I was 44. Yeah. I knew somebody at like 70 that had colorectal cancer, but not at a young age like that. So it was, I don't want to say I stalked Steve, but I kept wondering where
is he at? Oh, you're more than welcome to stalk me anytime, you know.
But I kept wondering. Oh, you know, and then he finally, you know, he came and he said he had colorectal cancer and it just, I wanted to reach out to him and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make that connection and just, because I think a lot of times I want to shut down because you kind of have a little bit of survivor guilt. You know, I've got two really good friends that were diagnosed with stage one that aren't here today, you know, but at the same time, my wife is always saying, you've got to get your story out. You've got to show people that are going through what you're going through that, you know, there's hope out there. There's that, you know, it's survivable. It's like your doctor said, Steve, this is very treatable.
Mm.
you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, with Glenn, it was our colleague Molly Grantham who put the two of us together.
Yeah.
With the upcoming event, the Get Your Rear in Gear event. This was a couple of years ago. And, you know, you have people, and I've done the Susan Komen walk a few times, and, you know, and where you have people with signs and the whole bit. And there's this guy with a sign that says, "I walk for Steve Crump." And I'm like, "Who is this dude?" And Molly says, "Oh, yeah, this is Glenn," and blah, blah, blah.
That's awesome.
And so that was the beginning of an unlikely friendship, you know. Yeah. And I mean, we haven't seen each other in a while, but we text, we talk on the phone. "Hey, the doctor was saying this, what's going on with you? How, you know, we have an affinity towards aviation." I'm always asking him dumb questions about Cessnas and stuff, or planes he's working on. It's like, "Hey, I was on a so-and-so and I hit this air pocket." But in other words, we've established a good enough friendship where we can, thank God, talk about things well beyond our illness, you know. Yeah. And there's some really cool common ground. But it was that particular awareness event that put the two of us together.
Yeah.
You hit on something really important too, though, is guys just not wanting to deal with this sort of thing. They don't want to talk about this sort of thing. We don't want to talk about the symptoms that you were dealing with, you know, before the diagnosis. How do we get past that, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, and no, that's a good point. You know, I was misdiagnosed for years. Jeez. You know, I work on small airplanes, so I'm working on a couple doctors' airplanes. And, you know, when you'd get them alone and you're like, "Hey, you know, I got this issue."
Yeah.
And you know, they're like, they'd ask you a couple questions. Is the blood bright red or is it dark red? And you'd say bright red. And it's like, "Oh, you've ever had hemorrhoids?" Probably just an internal hemorrhoid. So I went for years being diagnosed, even went to the doctors, you know, and got checked and internal. So I think talking and just, you know, kind of laughing about it, because, you know, we don't mind laughing. We don't mind drinking a beer. So, you know, bring it up. And, you know, my main job at, you know, American Airlines, you know, we talk about it all the time. And I'll get text messages, little discreet text messages. "Hey, Glenn, what's that favorite prep that you like? What's that prep that works good for you?" And, you know, just stuff like that. So it's, I think talking about it, I just, getting it out there.
I wanted to ask, I'm not sure if this came up with either of you. Did doctors tell either of you that prior to being diagnosed that had you had a colonoscopy, they could have caught it?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What was it like to hear that?
I'm going to be blunt. It made me feel like a complete dumbass. I mean, it was one of those things of where everything that you go through, from having to deal with the insurance companies, to being inconvenienced, to having to step away from the job you love, to, you know, dealing with everything from family to friends, you know, you feel like, I really could have avoided this, you know, but yet I'm going through this. I mean, that was, you know, and politely people will say, "Hey, don't beat yourself up." But in many instances, I don't have a choice but to, you know. So the question then becomes, how do you get out of it? You know, how do you make lemonade out of sour lemons?
Glenn, they told you that too?
They did. But in, you know, it really, if you look at the cards, I mean, they just moved the colonoscopy recommendation age from 50 to 45. I mean, I was 44, you know, so I mean, we can Monday morning quarterback my case all you want, but never was it, and anybody ever thought that I had colorectal cancer. So it's, I never second guess that. So for me to have a colonoscopy, my surgeon told me that my tumor was 6.5 inches when they discovered it. And he said it had probably been growing in me for 5 years.
Wow. Wow.
So to have had a colonoscopy at 39, that wasn't happening. And of course, I didn't know it at the time. You know, I didn't think anything of it.
And the sad thing is, with all the research that's come out as it relates to people getting screened at 45, you know, there's been some coverage on the fact that a lot of insurance companies don't want to pick up the tab for 45-year-old men that go in to get screened.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and here's the thing. I turned 50 in 2017. No. Yes.
You're that 50? Long,
almost 55 almost, in fact. But you know what, Steve? Here's the thing. No, this is why I bring it up. I was putting it off a year or two. Your case came along, and we had long conversations about it. It's like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? I'm in the window. Yes. I got to go get my colonoscopy. Sure. But there's that fear. You know what I mean? The whole thing is, you know, it's taking time off of work, mm-hmm. right? It's drinking the fluids. Oh, it's going through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And people talk about all that. But you know what? In the end, it wasn't that big.
No,
deal,
it's not. Right?
No, it isn't. It really isn't. You know, and if there's a slogan to kind of go with the meteorologist deal of turn around, don't drown, my thing would be don't frown, put on the gown.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I like that. That's perfect. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean, because, again, it's. You know what? 6 hours of inconvenience, maybe in your life, right?
If that much,
yeah. To and it's inconvenience. I'm not talking about pain or agony or anything. It's just a, you know.
Well, Alex doesn't know this, but the three of us know it. I mean, the hardest part of the whole deal is the anxiety you put on yourself leading up to it. That's the worst part of it. You know,
I mean, I'm coming home from a trip. You know, the night before, I have to do this thing and drink the stuff and go through all the other, you know, rigors.
I mean, just to be clear, I think it's important people understand, right? You're going to be flushed out. Yeah, I mean, that's just what's going to happen.
Yep.
And that's what the doctors need you to do that so they can get a clear look at what's going on, you know, inside your colon so they can detect, you know, a tumor or any other kind of problem that could be in there to save your guys' lives, our lives.
Yes.
That's what this is about.
Yes. Yep.
After going through what both of you have gone through, do you try to make it a point to talk to people about this or bring this up? Or is it still something that, you know, doesn't just come up in everyday conversation?
I mean, for me, if anybody wants to talk, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have not necessarily been on the speaker circuit per se, but I mean, people will stop me on the street and will ask me a question, and I'll try to provide some answers. You know, and you know, far as everything from how are you to how do we get screened if we don't have insurance? There are programs out there, you know, that, make it available for people that may have these kinds of health concerns and may not be able to afford, you know, the price of a test or being able to get it done without having sufficient health insurance.
Glenn, do you find yourself talking to people about screening?
I do. And as Jamie said earlier, you know, he was influenced to move his schedule, you know, to get back on schedule with Steve's diagnosis. And I had a lot of people come to me, you know, and say, man, I just want you to know that I went and got a colonoscopy and, you know, they removed three, you know, precancerous polyps or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just very grateful. And that kind of puts in emotion, like what we were talking about before, that you need to share and you need to get that, you know, that word out there. And, you know, it's, anytime you can talk about stuff and bring stuff up, it opens things up in avenues, and you know, people get more comfortable about it. And you know, American Airlines, I work there, and those guys there, everybody knows. You know, it's a running joke that my seat is right next to the men's bathroom. You know, when we come in there, so it's everyone knows that. You know, so
we understand.
They understand. They get it, and it's just, you know, so it's. It's good, yeah.
I mean, early detection, early diagnosis is everything, right?
It's everything. In my case, there's no way that I would have had a colonoscopy at 38, 39, 40 years old to find out what they found at me in 44. So I can't, it's hard to throw a stone, but, you know, they advocate listening to your body, you know, and you have got to listen to your body. When you see changes, and I did see changes at 3 and 4 years before I was diagnosed, but I didn't recognize that, you know, and I didn't know enough to go to say, hey, I want a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm.
Would that be your message to people who listen to this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen to your body, listen to your bathroom, you know, watch your bathroom habits. It's,
And I think that is important, just to be specific, right? You mentioned blood in the stool, those sorts of, were there other things as well?
Yes, I actually had a groove. So every time I'd go to the bathroom, you could see I had a groove in my stool with a track of blood in it, and that was the tumor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was that's how it started. You know, and then it progressively got so bad that I couldn't go to the bathroom, you know, and that's where I was having the trouble.
And the reality is, it's not like catching a cold or something like that, where it's just like, okay, fine, I'll take some NyQuil or whatever, and you're done. It's like, no, it is a lingering situation that can only be fixed through seeing a doctor, or being screened,
and having the doctor call the right shots to make sure you get those right.
Exactly, because misdiagnosis, you know, and even having the right advocates, because again, going back to what we said earlier. You know, they were suggesting hospice for me hours after. And had we not gotten that second opinion in another state, quite possibly I would not be here having this conversation with you guys today.
Yeah.
Steve, before we break here, same question I just asked Glenn. Any message that you'd like to share with folks before we leave?
Same thing Glenn says. Listen to your body. Know your family history. Don't be afraid to share with people you trust, and even people that you don't trust. I mean, in other words, early detection, early prevention is perhaps the best way of dealing with the situation on the front end, so you don't have to mess with it later, you know, that could really severely impact your life.
Steve Crump, Glenn McDermott, thank you both for coming in here and openly talking about what you've both gone through. And of course, we'll be thinking of you guys in the years to come.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bowl. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios at Advent Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.